You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. Now, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Chris Chobert, the CIO of the Department of Health and Human Services, Office of the Inspector General. Now, Chris, before break, we were learning about how you as the CIO support the Office of the Inspector General. We were learning a little bit about the makeup of your office, a good budget, $20 to $30 million range. Let's talk about your priorities. What are you trying to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
And one of the things I'm trying to do is make sure we focus on just not taking on too many different priorities, but focus on a few. So the first is upgrading our network. The network that supports all these people hasn't been upgraded in many years. We have very slow connections to many of our field offices, and we don't have the redundancy that we need. So we're spending a significant amount of our effort to build a redundant network that has the bandwidth that we need given the amount of data that we use. So that's the first one. The second one is to upgrade our mobile capabilities. As I mentioned, we've got a lot of agents in the field. They're using more antiquated type of devices. We're moving to smartphones, and that project is well underway. It's one that it's a huge officer safety issue, and it's one that we're primarily focused on. And a third one is to start to get ourselves in position to start adopting the cloud. I believe that cloud computing is extremely important to our future success. As I mentioned, we have large data sets that we have to do a lot of analytics on. And so that's getting ourselves in a position to be able to adopt cloud computing is one of our key priorities. Now, we have other things, too. I don't want to diminish cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is something that we focus on as a mission of our overall organization, as well as what we're doing. But if I had to say three priorities, those first three are the ones I'd focus on.
All right, let's start with the network. You said it's fairly old. When you talk about the speed issue, the bandwidth issue, what's that mean? And then what are you doing to improve upon the network? There's the big GSA has the big Networks 2020 contract, but that's still roughly a year to 2 years away from really being able to take advantage of it. So how are you in the meantime going to upgrade and make it better?
So there's two pieces to that. One is within each of our field offices, we have, you know, again, I can get into the weeds on the technical aspects of it, just to say that we are upgrading the bandwidth to each of our field offices based on the number of people that have there and the traffic. We have all of our traffic, our network routed through a building in downtown DC. We have to move out of that situation and have redundant network hubs. So we're going to be on the East Coast, the West Coast, and have our traffic in a situation where we don't have a single point of failure. So right now we have it's unreliable. It's too unreliable to support our mission. And so we want to take care of that.
Well, you talked about resiliency and COOP when you talk about single point of failure, but will also help with bandwidth because the people maybe on the West Coast where you have offices or won't have the data, the network, the won't have to travel as far, so to speak, to hit that main data center? Or is this all just about resiliency and COOP?
No, it's both. That's also part of it, right? So if you have people on the West Coast that are sending all their traffic through the East Coast, that's, you know, not a situation you want to be in. So we're making that a better, that also contributes to the overall performance.
Did it surprise you that your resiliency was based on one network, one point of failure? You think then these days that even if you had two separate data centers, that would be the logical way. But it's a little surprising that you have the one central place. Did that surprise you when you got here a couple months ago?
It did surprise me, but you know, there's not much, I should say somewhat, but nothing really surprises me too much what I've seen over the years. There's different priorities and then there's different approaches, and don't worry too much about why we're here or where we are. We just figure out where we want to go, right? And so we recognize that was not a good situation to be in and that we needed to make a change.
So you have to just, come on, it's just me and you talking here. You did an enterprise architecture, right? You first thing you did when you came in?
Yeah, so I could talk about that for a long time. I think that, you know, one of the things I try to tell people, what I realize that I think enterprise architecture, having that background is one of the most important backgrounds you can have as a CIO. It is not about some people kind of think of it as this bureaucracy or about documentation. To me, it's about thinking about where you want to go and how you're going to get there.
And I think so much of what CIOs are doing nowadays is part of that. When you talk about FITARA, the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act, and I know maybe we can get to that in a little bit, but that's all what that is calling for, the CIO to say, where's the money being spent? How's it being spent today? And what's going to be spent tomorrow? And if they don't have that background, that understanding, it's a lot harder than people realize. So it's good to see. Another big priority for you was around mobile capabilities. And you said you're moving to smartphones. So are you guys many agents on BlackBerries now, and you're moving to an advanced weather?
Yeah, so we're moving from BlackBerries to iPhones to be specific about what we are doing. And that'll give us a lot more capability in terms of the types of work that they try to do, right? The types of apps that are available to them right out of the box. We work with Homeland Security actually to vet some of our mobile apps, and make them available to our folks that are out there doing operations on a daily basis.
Are you guys in a pilot stage with the iPhones right now, and or is it a full rollout?
We are in a pilot stage. We will be rolling out over the summer.
And the current pilot, is it how many people right now? A couple hundred, or just a couple, 50 people? And are you in that pilot? Are you, quote unquote, drinking your own champagne?
Yeah, I try to test out the products. I don't want to give someone something that I am not willing to use myself, right? So we're doing that. Pilot's a small number of folks, 10 or 15 folks at this point. But we are going to start expanding that pilot and roll it out to the field over the next few months.
And part of when you talk about mobility, bring your own device comes up, that idea of, does the government furnish it, or is this going to come from, is there some way to make it work with your own personal device? Is that a part of the conversation yet, or is that further down the road?
That's further down the road. That's not something that there's been a lot of demand for among our folks. People aren't asking. There are some organizations where people have a big demand for that. So it hasn't been part of the conversation yet. The big conversation has been, like I said, it's the law enforcement agents out in the field who are doing all kinds of operations. They don't spend very much time in their office. And a mobile phone, a smartphone, an iPhone specifically, will give them a lot more capability.
Is another part of this conversation sometimes you hear is around tablets. Is that another discussion that's happening yet? Or is it, again, you said just smartphones?
We are focusing on the smartphones. We had tried using tablets, and we found that actually, even though tablets are a lighter form factor, they don't work that well for what the types of jobs our agents do. So they don't need to sit out there in a car or somewhere with a device as big as a tablet. They actually, when they take that back, they're using it to do, look at spreadsheets. They're doing lots of different things. And so it just hasn't worked as well. So we're actually moving away from tablets for the agents, even though that we initially thought that might have been a way to go, and giving them laptops. That's what they mostly requested.
And that's interesting, because I was actually just talking to a very similar office, the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, and they were moving to a kind of a heavier tablet, one of the Microsoft Surfaces, which can act as both their desktop computer or their laptop computer, as well as a tablet. So it's an interesting, just a dynamic. Different people have different, need different things. So it's interesting. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into that third priority, and then we'll talk about data. My guest is Chris Chilbert, the CIO in the Department of Health and Human Services, Office of the Inspector General. I'm your host, Jason Miller.
You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. Now, here's
your host,
my guest
today is Chris Chilbert,
Jason Miller,
the CIO in the Department of Health and Human Services, Office of Inspector General. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Chris, before break, we were talking a little bit about mobility and the move to iPhones, and interesting move away from tablets. One thing that kind of occurred to me as well is the idea of mobile apps and whether or not you guys are going to develop mobile apps, or there's apps out there that maybe you can already use. Talk a little bit about your plans around that.
Well, we're starting off with using apps that are already out there. We aren't developing any of our own today, although we certainly are looking at the ability to do that in the future.
One of the other big priorities you mentioned was the cloud. A lot of people moving to the cloud. You said further adoption of the cloud, so that means you must already be in the cloud a little bit. Talk a little bit about what your current state is around cloud computing and where you hope to be going.
Currently, I already leverage the cloud for our email and our office productivity suite, so we're using it for Microsoft Office 365 currently provides us with the cloud right now. We have several applications that we manage across the organization. We have more than 40. Those are currently hosted within a data center that we currently maintain and one that's another federal data center. We're going to be moving all of our applications to what they call a co-location data center that has connections to any number of cloud providers. And we're going to be putting them on virtual servers. What that means is that we're basically creating a private cloud, and we'll be 100% on our private cloud with the ability to start moving and migrating into commercial cloud as we develop new applications. The other thing is we do use cloud computing on our mission side, our auditors. So we have a large role in cybersecurity and doing scanning. We use a commercial cloud to prepare for some of the vulnerability scans and the penetration testing that our auditors do of other organizations to help prepare for that.
I want to talk about the mission side, but before that, let me go back to this idea of moving to almost a private cloud with the idea of potentially moving to a commercial cloud. It's always based on the sensitivity of the application and as well as the the security of the system that potentially it's moving to. Are those still two of the biggest ideas, things you have to look at before you say, okay, this can be in the commercial cloud or this stays in the private cloud?
I think that's part of it. Part of it is also we want to build new applications. Or some of our applications have been fairly old, and we want to take advantage of some of the capabilities that cloud provides. So there are, for example, across the entire, if you look at a system as being a stack of technology, the technologies available to you from many of these commercial cloud providers are much more advanced than what we built them on. So it makes sense to think about, as we build new applications, moving them as we build them, not just moving them over right away. We're going to be saving an enormous amount of money in order by just going to this private cloud. We're going to be much more secure and more resilient. Going to the commercial cloud providers, we'll be going to FedRAMP certified commercial cloud providers. So security will be part of that consideration and to some degree built into what we move into.
Right now, FedRAMP is low and moderate. There's a move to make it a high baseline. Is that something from an IG's perspective, because you guys deal with law enforcement information, data analysis, so much of it, that you're waiting on that high baseline at all?
We would like to see that, but for us, most of our systems are at moderate level, so we aren't necessarily needing that to move forward. But certainly, I think that's a good move forward.
It's always interesting because you think of IGs, again, just my assumption was that, they must need high. But again, you said most of your systems are moderate. So the current state of FedRAMP could meet your needs or is meeting your needs in many ways, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
The other thing that you mentioned was about the mission side when it comes to cloud. Talk a little bit about how the mission folks are using the cloud right now. You said there's several apps and there's several ideas that are out there that where they can kind of draw on, whether it's data or whether they can draw on applications to really improve how they meet the mission.
Well, it's more specifically, we have auditors who are looking at, they have their responsibility for ensuring the security of other systems of other organizations. And so they'll do things such as penetration testing, which is a really important way of ensuring that the systems are secure. Before they go into another organization's systems, we want to make sure that we understand the technologies, right? So you don't want to do a penetration test against technologies that you aren't familiar with. So the cloud is a perfect way of standing up an environment that gives you the opportunity to prepare for doing a penetration test and then ramping it down, and then you only pay for what you consume in that situation. So that's one of our big uses of it today.
Do you have, a DevOps environment or test and evaluation environment set up, a sandbox?
We would like to eventually get there. That's where our future move is. And if I were to give you other priorities, I would have talked a lot about Agile and DevOps. That's an overall organization effort that we're undertaking. We're learning a lot from other parts of the federal government, and we're training our folks and we're thinking about it. And a lot of what we're doing today is putting us in a really good position to be able to start adopt some of these best practices.
Let's talk a little bit about, if you don't mind, DevOps, because I think it's an interesting topic that, and coming from DHS, which is, well, number one, I just sat down with Luke McCormick and Soraya Correa talking about DevOps and their change in the way they're buying IT. It seems to be spreading across a lot of the components as well across DHS. What are you looking at from an HHS OIG perspective around DevOps and Agile?
DevOps is really where we want to go in terms of how we do things. But I emphasize that's an approach that we think is the best approach in order to achieve the outcomes that we want to achieve. So we're looking at, given we're past maybe some of the sequestration, but still budget is always something that's on your mind. We have to get the most out of what we do. So you have to be thinking about, how do I make investments that are going to provide the most value to our folks? And how are we going to better achieve this mission? I think that what DevOps allows you to do and what Agile allows you to do is to make much smarter decisions, because you're starting to do work in much smaller batches. My very first government project was about 15 years ago or so, and it was one of those ones. It was billion-dollar project, 1,000 people or so, very long cycle times based on the requirements that, huge sets of requirements. Trying to get all that right up front is really pretty much impossible. I realized that very quickly. It wasn't the right way to do business.
From your perspective, are you doing training? Are you asking your IT folks to take courses? Are you bringing in people who have experience in Agile DevOps outside of yourself and your experience at DHS?
Yeah, we're doing all of that. So we are done a couple field trips with our folks over to places that have already adopted Agile development. We've had some people that have from other organizations have opened up their training courses to us. And so we've started to send some people to those. We're looking at bringing people in to do training of our folks as well. We recognize, and you mentioned Luke McCormick and Soraya Correa, I think that's a great example of having a CIO and a chief procurement officer working really closely together. And I think what DHS has started to model and what we would like to do, and I think we do really well within our HHS OIG, is look at how those disciplines come together in order to deliver capability. So in my view, you need to have the CIO, the CFO, the CPO, the head of HR all working together in order to deliver. And it's something that we want to model as a OIG. And so that's another point I should bring up is, you know, with being an inspector general, you are out there looking at the way other folks do their work. In order to be able to be successful at that, we have to be a model agency in how we do that. And so that's one of our goals. And so we believe very firmly, I believe very firmly, that, you know, Agile, DevOps, and all the set related practices and how they change how your organization does business is very important. And for us to be successful as an IG, we're gonna model the way.
And you bring up the relationship between the CIO and the CAO, but also the chief financial officer and others. From a Fatara perspective, and I know that you're one piece of a big organization, HHS, but is Fatara starting to trickle down to your level? And are you starting to have those meetings and starting to talk to your counterparts in the finance office and the HR office?
The good thing, again, being part of a smaller organization, it makes it, my offices are a lot closer to those people. So it's easier to have those conversations. You know, I work, you know, my office is next to our CFO, I actually report to our CFO, but we have a deputy CFO, and our organizations are constantly in communications. The Fatara, I think, is good from the perspective of trying to bring those processes and those thoughts and those people and those functions together. So I am seeing it. And within the department, certainly we participate with the overall Health and Human Services CIO Council. We do have to maintain our independence from the organization as a whole in order to be the inspector general, but we certainly work with them and have input, and we talk to them about how the Fatara is going as well.
Obviously, the auditors have investigators have a whole different group there. You brought up the HHS more broadly. I know you have to maintain your independence. Do you deal with shared services? Do you look at what they're doing and beg and borrow and steal from them in terms of, hey, that's a good piece of software, we could use it too? Or, hey, there's a shared services, Office 365, as one example you brought up. Is that an agency-wide, meaning all of HHS is using that? Are those relationships happening?
Yes, they are happening. We do get shared services for certain functions from HHS as a whole. And that's something that, again, doesn't compromise our independence, and we're able to do that where it makes sense. And again, we support where it makes sense to use shared services, and especially on our back office when you start talking about financial applications and things like that, trying to have multiple different versions of systems out there and getting them to talk together doesn't make a lot of sense. So there's a lot of, so we do consume several of the department's shared services.
And I think that's something that's growing. I know there's a big push from the White House for it, so we know that. But I think it's something that I'm seeing happening more naturally than just because OMB, you know, kind of said so. Throughout the conversation, we've talked a lot about big data. You brought it up several times. So let's jump right into big data. You talked about the chief data officer that you work with very closely. But also you talked about, you know, when you talk about an IG's office, really they are big data collectors. So talk a little bit about what you're doing around big data, the tools and the techniques, and how is the CIO you're supporting that effort?
As a mission perspective, when you consider the portfolio that we have responsible for, it's $1 trillion of spending. The amount of data that is generated from all the billing associated with Medicare and Medicaid and other programs is enormous. So we get a lot of that data, and we have to pull different sources of data together. So you're taking data related to healthcare from different sources, and you're bringing it together and running software packages such as SaaS is one example, and looking for abnormal patterns or trends or things that don't look right to help you focus in where there might be cases of waste or fraud or abuse. The organization has been doing this for a long time in different pockets and different parts of the organization. The chief data officer is starting to bring a lot of these together and looking for better tools. And I work with her very closely to start to provide the environment and share ideas on what kind of tools that we can offer to our folks that are doing the analysis. I've been in conversations even recently with our investigators how since we've stood up this chief data officer function last year, you've started to see be able to take advantage of these analytics that have been done in order to start to target some of the investigations, and it's had a positive impact on the organization.
Because of the network challenges you have, we talked about that earlier, does that hamper your ability to use different data tools or to access the data? And is that something that falls on your shoulders to fix, if you will?
Some of it comes down to the confidence of the person on the other end, right? That if an analyst wants to use data in the cloud, they have to be confident they're going to be connected to it all the time, and it can't take forever. So, you know, having the appropriate infrastructure to be able to take advantage of the cloud is very important. So that's one of the one big areas. So yeah, it's certainly something that we're thinking about.
And as far as the tools and the techniques and the analysis, you have to have, you're providing the infrastructure to the chief data officer. So is she then making that bigger decision of what gets bought or based on obviously the conversations with the analysts and the investigators and such? Or is it something that has to kind of come through your office because you've got to make sure from enterprise architecture perspective, they sit, they will run on the network, they can be interoperable with other tools. Like, give me a sense of how that, that relationship's working.
We work together in terms of when we start doing market research. Our chief data officer is, and her team spend a lot of their time doing this market research, and they work with our team. So it's not way down the road. You want to start working together as you start conceiving these ideas. So it is a team effort. We have a software development team, for example, that provides support from some architects as you start thinking about how you're going to deploy new tools. We have an infrastructure team that helps to wants to understand what type of tools we're trying to buy and what they need to do to support that. Our information assurance or security team, they're looking at these at the same time. So we work together, but have different as a kind of a matrix team looking at different aspects of the challenge.
Very nice. Now let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we can talk a little more about other priorities. You mentioned cybersecurity is one of them. My guest is Chris Chilbert, CIO of the Department of Health and Human Services Office of Inspector General. I'm your host, Jason Miller.
You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Chris Chilbert, the Chief Information Officer of the Department of Health and Human Services, Office of Inspector General. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Chris, before break, we're talking a lot of your priorities. One priority that you did bring up but that we didn't get into yet is around cybersecurity. So let's a little talk about that. There's a big cyber sprint. We know that cybersecurity is something that every CIO really is focusing on. How are you guys within the IG's office really taking the steps necessary to protect your data and your network?
So cybersecurity is important to us from an internal, how we manage our own systems and our own data. It's also important to us as an inspector general. You may have seen that over the last several months, there have been several very high-profile cases of hospitals and medical providers that have had ransomware and other types of attacks. So one of the things that was interesting to me was just how valuable that criminals find health data, in many cases even more valuable than certain types of financial or other personal data. So it is something that is important to the entire healthcare industry. So as such, as our one of our roles as an organization is to help ensure the protect the integrity of the healthcare data and healthcare industry. So internally, we also have to look at ourselves and make sure that we are beyond reproach in terms of the things that we do. So one of the things we're working with the entire Department of Health and Human Services on is the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation, or CDM, program that DHS is managing. So we're part of that, and we're leveraging that. Another thing that we do a lot is just basic cyber hygiene. You know, many of the problems that you have is because people aren't educated on the threats out there. So we do things like spear phishing attacks, and that are things that we run on our own people. So they'll get an email that looks a little suspicious, and then they click on it and tells them, oh, you've had, and then they get some additional training. So we found that that's really increased our awareness of the problems and the potential threats that people face. From an organization, we as an IG are still working through some of the things that we're going to do. But as I mentioned, our auditors have a team of folks that are out there doing different types of vulnerability scans and penetration testing. I encourage and think that that's a role across the government that IGs can play, as being an independent organization to play a role in looking at cybersecurity. When we talk about our investigators, you know, crime increasingly has a cyber component to it. We have criminal organizations that are involved in all kinds of different crimes, you know, healthcare type of crime and health related crimes that involve stealing data or doing different types of ransomware attacks, as I mentioned. So our investigators get involved in that. So there's reinforcing functions within our organization looking at cybersecurity. It's certainly something that's really high on all of our radars, and we are really focused on it.
You brought up the CDM program. one of the challenges I've heard is around CDM is kind of the slowness of the rollout. Have you guys started in that phase one, phase two timeframe in terms of getting some of the tools, or are you waiting for that first round of tests to happen at DHS and then you expect tools maybe later this summer?
I don't have the exact timeline with me, but we're more in the earlier phases where they've done the assessment and there's data coming back to HHS about the tool. So that's still a ways off. And, you know, again, I'm familiar with the program. Again, having come from DHS, I think it's a good thing to do, an important program. And so we'll be working closely with the Department of Health and Human Services as well as DHS to make sure it's successful.
The other piece of this is I'm very always interested in the spearfishing attempts that as you kind of test your own employees. Are they doing pretty well or they need some help? Because I'm surprised not more agencies don't do this.
Yeah, I think it's something that everybody should do, right? Because that's a huge attack vector for folks to get inside, sending an email. And many of them are very sophisticated. So we have seen an improvement. So and it's not that you just do it once. You do training on it. You do it. You try to increase the sophistication of it and then continue the training. So we certainly measure that and measure our success. So we've seen improvements over time. We do a lot of education of the workforce to make sure that we're trying to measure the effectiveness of that education to see are people doing stuff. What I can also say is we're also getting emails sent to us that are not spear phishing attacks, and now employees are forwarding over because, you know, we had one that came, I forgot who sent it out, but it was a kind of an organization-wide email, and it looked a little fishy, and then it got a lot of people sent it over to our chief information security officer, so it was really good to see that.
Which means they've been educated to a certain extent. They're at least on the lookout for those attacks. I'm sure you get not only the testing spear phishing attacks, but you get real spear phishing attacks as well. As you said, the amount of cybersecurity threats and vulnerabilities and attacks are ever increasing. I'm sure you see it on your end as much as any agency does. Looking forward, one thing about cybersecurity is the idea that, as you mentioned, that the investigators and auditors are doing some penetration testing. They want to set up maybe a sandbox. Is that also something that you're going to ask them to come back and look at your networks and help to do yet? Is that in the works?
We did it ourselves first, right? So it's one of those things. You have to eat your own dog food. As a CIO, you eat your own dog food. As an organization, you do too. So we certainly have done those and looked at the results and dealt with anything that we saw out of those. I don't want to get too much depth on that, but to say that we certainly do things the same things to ourselves that we expect of others.
I want to jump over to innovation because a lot of times people talk about cybersecurity and that they think that shuts down any opportunity to be innovative. And what I'm seeing from different CIOs that I talk to is that's actually not the case. Innovation and security are starting to kind of walk the same path. Talk a little bit about how you're ensuring that there is innovation happening within your CIO world.
The way I think of it, if you want innovative ideas, the best way to have innovative ideas is to have a lot of ideas. And so you need ideas to come from a lot of different people. Yeah, the challenge is always to figure out what are the good ideas from the bad ideas and which ones work and don't work. But one of the things that I'm trying to do is institute this culture of people, let's surface these ideas, not just, and it can't be just from the IT staff, it's from your entire organization. So you're looking for people to understand or be encouraged to share the ideas that they have about how to do something in a different way. Another piece of that is thinking about, well, how do you test those ideas, right? So I'm a big proponent of the idea of, you know, not just doing a pilot for the sake of doing a pilot, because you'll always just learn something from it. You really want to be focused on what is it that you're trying to learn as a result of that pilot. And if you get people thinking along the lines, you know, if you're familiar with the lean startup and that approach, is it's taken a really structured approach to testing things. And I think that's something everybody can do. So we want to promote that. As I mentioned, as we move to the cloud and as we start to put in place the ability to stand up and run projects on a short-term basis and not have to make a huge infrastructure investment from an IT perspective, that cloud ability will enable us to do that much better than we can today. The idea that security gets in the way of innovation is just an excuse many times, right? People say that without really thinking. Certainly, there's always trade-offs that you have to think about, but I think that if you start thinking about security from the moment that you start something, or don't throw out the idea just, you know, right off the bat because there might be a security issue, you know, let's test it out and see if you're making an assumption it's a security issue. How do I test that idea?
A lot of agencies are setting up, if you will, buyers clubs. HHS has one, for instance, an idea lab, if you will. DHS, as we've talked about several times during our conversation, has a procurement innovation lab. Not that you guys would set up your own lab, but are you looking at to take advantage of whether the HHS one or doing something internally that really promotes that innovation?
I've met with the HHS Idea Lab folks, and we certainly want to do more business with them. So we're looking to see what we can learn from them. We also look at other parts of government. And I will shamelessly take good ideas from other places and see what works and what doesn't. You know, not everything is going to work given our organization, but you certainly can learn from what other people have tried. So yeah, the HHS Idea Lab is a great function. Like the Procurement Innovation Lab, DHS doing is a great project that they have going on, a program that they have going on. So we're looking there, looking elsewhere. Where do I see that our innovative projects and programs going on, and what can we take from those? So certainly looking at that.
One thing when you bring up borrowing, begging, stealing from others, no shame there, is your relationship with other agency IG offices and CIOs. Is there some collaboration going on? Do you guys look to each other to share some of the best practices?
Absolutely. So there's a organization of all of the IGs that, and specifically we have a working group around IT. We meet on a periodic basis, and usually it's via a conference call, and just share what's going on among the different organizations. And we even just communicate over, as simple as people put out an email question. We got one yesterday around communications and asking, hey, what are we doing here? What can we learn from you? Many of the functions of an IG, the types of audits that people do, and some of the other law enforcement aspects are very common. So you want to know, what are you doing for case management? What are you doing for audit tracking? And see what kind of problems you've run into. So it's certainly something that we have a lot of communication on, and we certainly have a network of folks we can reach out to.
We're almost out of time. Before I let you go, I always like to ask my getaway question about vendors. What should they know about working with your office?
Well, this year, I would say, just to put it out there, we don't have any major acquisitions coming up. So not like you're going to put something in your pipeline right now.
You just heard a big sigh right now.
What I will say is that we are focusing on these projects that will set us up to do different things in the future. We talked about innovation a little bit ago. I'm a big believer in the digital services playbook and adopting those approaches and innovative approaches. So we're looking for people that are going to partner with us and try out and help us become a model agency for leading practices in IT. So if folks are interested in that, certainly we're going to be an organization to work with, right? So we're going to be doing agile software development. We're going to be adopting DevOps and other leading practices. Looking and need help to get there. We're looking for ideas on how to get there. So certainly, I talk to vendors on a periodic basis. I can't talk to everybody, and I can't necessarily guarantee I'll get back to everybody. But certainly always listening and willing to hear ideas about what folks think about new technologies, new approaches, and modern approaches to IT in general.
All right, I think that's great advice. And I know even though people are disappointed that there's no new major procurements coming, people, I'm sure, will still email you and call you up. Chris, this has been a very interesting conversation. I'm sure we can talk longer, but unfortunately we're out of time. I'd like to thank my guest today, Chris Chilbert, the Chief Information Officer of the Department of Health and Human Services, Office of Inspector General. Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. The entire show is available on demand on federalnewsradio.com. Search Ask CIO.